Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are and what time in the day you're listening to this episode of Talking the Blues, an entirely defensive episode of Talking the Blues this week. We're starting off with three fullbacks. George and Andy, how are you both?
We're starting off with what?
Three fullbacks. Centre-backs, whatever you want to call them. Central defenders. That joke fell flat, never mind.
Well, I'll kick off then on Brighton away. First of all, and you know, I'll readily admit that I've got my doubts about David Moyes being the long term best idea for Everton as manager. However, having said that, let's just brush that to one side. The one thing I don't think I've ever accused him of is lacking a passion for the club. And that was clearly demonstrated at Brighton when Everton got the late equaliser to take the point that they deserved from Brighton. And he did his little jig onto the pitch. And then the clown of the referee decided that that was a step too far.
Well, that's not fair, Andy. That's not the referee's decision. The referee has got a set of rules that he has to deal with. If the managers step outside the white box, the referee has to book them. It's not a decision made by the individual. It's something he has to do.
If you're going by the rule book that's clearly written by people who've got no idea of what football is about, then I would concede. What I'm suggesting is that the official didn't use any common sense in realizing that with probably another 5 or 10 seconds to play, once the players had resumed their positions for the re-kickoff, that he was going to blow the final whistle. And I don't think he showed any common sense. So I'm going to stand by Clown and I'm going to back it up in a minute. Mm. Okay? So yeah, I thought, let me finish, please.
I will.
And I thought David Moyes' post-match interview kind of backs me up on that, where he was incredulous at the fact that he'd been booked for his celebration of a deserved equaliser. And he intimated that some of the officials, and maybe the people writing the official's book of rules, don't understand what football means to people closely involved in the game, like managers, players and fans. The officials appear to be somewhat remote in that respect. And I'm going to expand it beyond the Everton sphere for the moment to the game at Old Trafford at the weekend when United played Fulham. And United scored what they thought was a good goal. And Marco Silva, the Fulham manager, oh, hello, ex-Everton, but let's not drag that into it, decided that he thought it was otherwise. And so he protested. And while VAR were checking it, the referee had given the goal and VAR looked at it. And VAR eventually came down on the side of Marco Silva, who'd been booked for his outburst of protest. Now, maybe Marco Silva used some choice language. Maybe he didn't. I don't know. But he got booked. But then VAR ruled in his favour that the goal wasn't a goal, that there was an offside or whatever it was, that there was offside. Is Marco Silva going to get that yellow card rescinded when he was proven to be correct? I'll wager that he doesn't. Now, coming back to the referee who was in charge at the Amex for our game, one Chris Cavanagh, I'll ask you and any other Evertonian to cast your mind back to March 2020. And you're all sat there thinking now, what happened in March 2020? I'll tell you what happened in March 2020. Everton hosted at Goodison Park Man United. Carlo Ancelotti was the manager. And now I think it's beginning to ring bells with you. And Everton scored a late, in inverted commas, winner. And it was overruled by VAR, and so the game was drawn. And Carlo Ancelotti, I would suggest, I don't know for definite, but I would suggest one of the calmer managers, not quite as hot-headed as Marco Silva might have been at Old Trafford, but Carlo Ancelotti calmly walked onto the pitch to question the referee's decision. And what happened? Chris Cavanagh showed Carlo Ancelotti a red card. Now tell me that was all to do with the rule book. I'm sorry, some of these guys reffing games and some of these guys in charge of the various rule books have got no idea what the game means to people. They've written a set of rules and these are the way you will interpret it, Mr. Cavanagh, Mr. Whoever. You're in charge. If that manager steps outside his little white box, you are to book him. Oh, hello. But it's all right when Jurgen Klopp goes tear-arsing round the pitch with a last-minute winner for Liverpool. Did he get booked? I don't recall it. Maybe he did. I don't recall it. What I'm saying is, and it's not necessarily anti-Everton, I just think that some of these people don't understand the passions that are involved with players, managers, coaching staff on the sidelines, and least of all, the fans in the stands. And I think some of them need to start turning on, you know, and using the common sense button, because it's clearly redundant. That's my initial rant over. Please discuss.
Inconsistency, you're talking about.
Pardon?
Inconsistency.
It's a lack of common sense for me, bro. I don't understand why they can't understand why a manager or a member of the coaching staff or whoever gets excited and proceeds outside a little white box. Here's another one for you then. Going back to the Old Trafford game, United against Fulham, which United won with a last-minute goal from Šeško. Good goal as well. Took it really well. Fair dues. United won 3-2. And half or practically all of the United bench tear ass down to the corner where Šeško was celebrating with the crowd. Did any of them get booked? These are all the subs who've got the yellow vest on to indicate that they are not part of the team playing on the pitch. They are or should be sat on the bench twiddling their thumbs, because that's apparently what the rule book seems to want them to do. Those players of United showed excitement and passion and delirium and all went hurtling down the touchline. Did any of them get booked? No. So where's... To me, it's just a lack of common sense and understanding of what trips a player's or a manager's mind for a few seconds. I just don't understand how they can be so remote from the game that they are officiating. I was going to say in charge of, but I don't want them to be in charge of it. I just want them to officiate it. And if officiating the game means that they stick 100% rigidly to a rule book that allows no leeway for passion, emotion, then the game's gone. The game is gone. David Pleat tearing across the pitch at Main Road many, many moons ago. Bob Stokoe running across the pitch in his flat cap. You know, there's been hundreds and hundreds of times when other players, managers, never mind the fans, have shown emotion and passion. And isn't that what football is supposed to be about? Because to me, that's exactly what it should be about. People getting excited, not squashed by an idiotic rule book that says you can't move outside an 8x6 white line on the side of the pitch. That's my initial rant. Part two, finished. Tell me I'm wrong. Convince me I'm wrong.
Absolutely, you're not wrong, Andy. I agree with every single word that you've just said. It did make me laugh when David Moyes, in his interview, though, referred himself as Pleaty. And probably none of the media there were old enough to know what he was talking about.
Yeah. I clearly am.
Wasn't you said Bob Stokoe was wearing a flat cap? Wasn't he wearing a trilby?
Oh, sorry, I beg you. You're right. He was a trilby. and he's Mac. It was a trilby. You're absolutely right.
But yeah, I can't remember who scored at the weekend, but I can remember something from 1973. What does that say?
Beckham scored at the weekend.
Yeah, I know, I can remember that just about. Don't ask me who scored the weekend before that.
Barry. But I've already said it. I just don't understand, you know, I don't understand what goes through some of these guys' minds. Yeah, I mean, are we suggesting, or is the rule book suggesting, that if the manager, a.k.a. Moisey on Saturday, runs onto the pitch, waving his arms about, celebrating, and goes outside his little white box, and the referee doesn't book him, that the referee is going to be sanctioned by the Premier League or the Football Association? Because if that's the case, then there's going to be an awful lot of referees going to be suspended for not doing their job properly. Players get suspended for 5 bookings. So the first time a referee is noted as not booking 5 managers, he should be suspended. That's how ridiculous the interpretation of the rules is, that I'm even coming up with an idiotic notion like that.
Each of the referees have an observer at each game, don't they?
Have they got their eyes open? Sorry, I'm being flippant.
No. I think it's a reasonable question to ask. And there is every likelihood of a referee, you know, just being noted in the observations that David Moyes left the technical area, which was the offence that he committed, and the referee failed to take the appropriate action. So... I am with George in this sense that one can't really blame the referee, although common sense should prevail. The referee probably thinks, why am I going to risk sanction against something which the rules clearly state shouldn't happen? Bonkers as it may be.
Well, to me it is bonkers, because I think if I was a referee, and a good friend of mine is a referee, and I'm going to have this conversation with him probably tomorrow, but he's not at Premier League level. Well, to be fair, he's retired now. But
how is Clive Thomas these days?
Jack Ellis.
There's a conversation we better have. No, my friend Jim is a very, very experienced referee, and he used to train referees. So I am going to have this conversation with him tomorrow. But are we suggesting that if the observer writes his report and says, you know, David Moyes ran on the pitch and Chris Kavanagh didn't reprimand him with a yellow card, then if the next time Chris Kavanagh is being reviewed, for want of a better word, and he says, well, I use common sense. There was 5 seconds to go. They just equalised. The guy's obviously excited, as are the rest of the players, as are the fans. To book him would have been churlish. Is he then going to get read the Riot Act? You will interpret the rules as we set them out for you, whether you like them or not. You are not allowed the freedom to interpret emotion and passion. Because if that's the case, then I wouldn't want to be Chris Kavanagh, having just slagged him off. Do you see where I'm coming from?
I do. Yeah. And there seems to be no room for common sense and no room for judgment.
So, so where does the game go from there when there's no room for common sense and judgment? It's mental. It's insane.
One could argue very successfully, I believe, exactly the same applies with VAR.
Yeah.
That you're taking away responsibility from the referee. Mm. And that being the case, the logical progression of this is that the more responsibility you take away from the referee, the less authority the referee has on the pitch, which means that players do what they do on the pitch in the full knowledge that ultimately the referee is not the final arbiter. And that's the danger of all of this, that we all complain, and most football fans complain about inconsistent refereeing, about the behaviour of players on the pitch, how they don't respect the referee. Well, actually, if you think about it logically, this is the core reason for it.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that being a referee is an easy job. It clearly isn't. But
they're not allowed to. They're not being allowed to be referees.
They're becoming automatons, aren't they? That's the rules that you've got to enforce them. There's no leeway. So, yeah. Having started off blasting him, I'm almost beginning to feel sorry for the fella now, because of the hand him and all the rest of the officials have been dealt or are being dealt. And somebody needs to look at the rule books, and somebody needs to sit down with them and say, do you seriously, do you seriously need that every time a manager steps outside his white box, he's got to be booked? There shouldn't be any criteria on it, if you like. But if it had been the 58th minute and we'd scored the equaliser, then with 30-odd minutes to play, then probably there isn't an excuse to go tear arsing down the touchline. But this was 94th minute stuff, wasn't it? What's he expected to do? Just stand there and clap?
Well, I suppose one thing we can be grateful for is the fact that Dave's dodgy knees stopped him from doing a knee slide, which would probably have got him a red card.
I can relate to that. That's one thing me and Mr. Moyes have got in common is dodgy knees.
We did have a conversation a few weeks ago, and I think the subject was raised as to whether David Moyes still had the passion for the game.
I don't think that's ever really in doubt, is it?
I was just going to bring that up and say if anybody ever had that doubt, I think that was firmly extinguished. The word I'm trying to say.
Yes. Blown out, that thought was blown out of the water with his display of with his post 94th minute antics.
Yeah. And I thought his, and I know George, you'll agree with this, I thought his press conference afterwards was
one of the best he's ever done.
One of the best he's ever done. Yeah.
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 Absolutely marvellous, man. Really, really good fun.
Yeah, he did. He spoke very well and he spoke very sensibly.
Yeah, totally. Should we sort of rewind a bit and go back to the beginning of the game?
Well, we're going back to 2020 and Ancelotti getting a red card.
We won't
regress that far. Okay. No,
let's rewind to the starting lineup.
It was interesting, wasn't it? Because when I saw it, I didn't know at the time when I first saw it that Mykolenko was injured, and I thought, hello, what's going on here? And I thought, my initial thought was four centre backs. Not one. Who's going to play four? I thought, is he going to drop Jimmy Garner back to play, you know, deeper than midfield, somewhere between midfield and the back four? I just didn't get it. And to be fair to Moyes, he explained it in his post-match that, he thought Brighton played very narrowly. They didn't play with any great width. And so he put four centre-halves out to make sure that the middle was absolutely rock solid. And when you heard him explain that, it suddenly made sense. But on first vision of the starting lineup, I thought, this looks odd.
Yeah.
Bro,
think you'll keep it for Fulham?
No, I don't. I would imagine if Mikko's fit for Fulham, Mikko will come back in. But I don't know. I mean, we're going to come to the if it ain't broke, don't fix it thing. Did the four centre halves work? If you like, did the back four or four centre halves work? I suppose by and large it did. I don't know. I can't wait for the selection now. The weekend.
Mykolenko's injury. Sorry, Paul.
No. Sorry, George. Carry on.
How bad is his injury, Mykolenko?
I think it was sickness rather than an injury, wasn't it?
Oh, right.
I didn't read anything about it.
I don't think anybody.
I thought Moisey said he picked up a knock in training.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure that's what I heard, that he picked up a knock, but I don't know. It's going to make waiting for the team selection even more interesting for the Fulham game, because Pato might be wondering whether he's going to start again. And the back four will be thinking, you can't drop me. I played well at Brighton.
Yeah. He's Pato now, is he?
Nah.
He's not Patterson now, he's Pato. He's obviously gone up in your estimations, Andy.
I think in the games he's played recently, the time he's had on the pitch recently, he's tried hard. And if people go out, we've said it on here, if people go out and put in the effort, and ultimately that effort isn't good enough and we lose the game, as long as they put the effort in, we'll kind of stick with it. And I think, in fairness, in the games he's played in the last few weeks, Nathan Patterson has worked hard. He's not gone out there and let anybody down. He's not gone out there and gone through the motions. He's gone out there and worked as hard as he could in that time. So in that respect, yeah, he's Pato. If he knows he's up, he'll be jock right back. No offence to Scots. Scots listening, I love Scotland.
I think there might be a temptation to go with the same defence, actually,
right
against Fulham. The problem, of course, is that it then restricts our ability to get forward, which was clearly the case in the first half when we didn't even have a shot on goal, did we? So, whether or not we, because I have the feeling that Fulham are a slightly more open team, so maybe we might feel that we can get at them a bit if we have a bit of width. I
But do
don't
you
know.
think we can play this boy that we got from Chelsea?
I think he'll come into the team straight away.
Right. In place of Grealish. Oh, well, not Grealish, was it? But in place of who? If it means that Ndiaye comes into the middle of the park, that's a good idea.
Yeah. Maybe it might be. I don't know. I'm not sure now. I don't know.
Just
That's what I say. That's where I'm looking forward now to seeing what his selection is.
given what we know about David Moyes and me being one of his greatest advocates, of course, it would be very untypical of him to start George, given
Yes.
that he's just come, but he'll obviously be on the bench.
Yeah.
And you know, if you look at our sort of attacking players, none of them really deserve to be dropped, do they? Harrison Armstrong looked good again. Dewsbury Hall back in the team didn't quite look as good as he has done, but then coming back from injury, and
Yeah.
I
Another
not
week will help KDH's match fitness.
yeah and I looks a little bit leggy, maybe a bit of an overhang from
AFCON.
AFCON. But none of them deserve to be dropped.
No, I mean, I think we said this a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? That as the guys come back from AFCON and from injury and suspension in Michael Keane's case, then suddenly the lack of depth in the squad becomes less of an issue because we've now got some depth. You know, there's a Rubenham and Rolle as well to bring into contention. It is, you know, obviously the loss now is Grealish, but with the others coming back from AFCON and coming back from injury and whatnot, suddenly the squad looks healthier. Might not be as strong as we'd like it to be, but it looks he's got options now. Whereas a couple of weeks ago he didn't. He was scratching around
Yeah,
he was
very much
scratching
so.
around for a starting 11 and three decent options from the bench. Now he's going to have. We might have to get to a stage where we don't need two goalies on the bench. Good heavens.
This is the lofty heights we're aspiring to, bro.
Oxygen.
He's I mean, Moyes is not going to change his approach to how he's gone to every away game this season, isn't it? He's going to keep it extremely tight, low block to begin with, and then as the game opens up in the second half, one assumes that's when he starts making his changes. So there's a very good case for saying, I mean, obviously he's going to go for Pickford in goal, but then back four of O'Brien, Tarkowski, Keane, and Branthwaite, with Garner Gay and James Garner. Being defensive midfielders, I can't see him going away from that, to be honest.
Well, we shall see. We'll have to wait for it to be revealed. We can't second, well, when we obviously we can second guess him, but I doubt any of us will get it 100% right. But you're probably right. He'll go with the same modus operandi of keep it tight and see how things develop through half an hour, 40 minutes, and then come on stronger in the second half. It's worked so far this season. It's not ideal. I think every Evertonian would like to see us be more offensive earlier in the game. It would be as we, and we've said this before, it would be nice to take the lead away from home and then defend it and maybe nick a second and put the game to bed. But he doesn't seem it's not his preferred option, is it? His preferred option is keep things tight, frustrate the opposition and pinch one. I'd just like us to pinch more than one. And earlier.
Well, I thought watching us on Saturday that we played some quite nice football. Kept the ball for longer than I've seen us keep the ball for ages, which makes sense because he's now got Branthwaite in the side and he's got Kieran Dewsbury-Hall back. So there are better players on the pitch, better passers of the ball. But for all that, and particularly in the first half, where we did keep the ball really quite well, we were never threatening.
There's no penetration there, is there?
None. And that's why I think Ndiaye should be brought in from the wing and, you know, invited to cause trouble nearer Mr. Barry, who's getting quite deft. And, you know, the little pass that he played through in the second half for somebody was gorgeous.
A KDH.
Yeah. And I'd bring him in. You know, the only change I would make would be structural, if you like, that you bring Ndiaye in. He's doing, you know, he's being asked, because we play so slowly, he's being asked to do far too much work on the wing. He's supposed to beat three people. And, you know, he is a good crosser of the ball, la, 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 la. He's also a very good finisher. And I think we should be playing Barry with him just behind him.
In the old inside forward role.
Yeah, if you like, with a tip, with a Trilby hat, yeah.
I suppose just going back to your mate Pato.
Nat Pat.
one of the things about when he's on the pitch is that we do get, I mean, he crosses the ball more. So we get the ball into the penalty box more when he's on the pitch than we do when he's not on the pitch, given the four centre backs lined up in across the back four.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the other big advantage of the back four being who they are is that when we get free kicks and corners, we have got some presence, and all four of them are good headers of the ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so.
Oh, the future's bright, the future's blue. I wondered on Saturday when Beto scored, and, you know, whether that this could be not a turning point. We always kind of think in cliches, but a kind of turning point. That squad, and I thought Moyes' substitutions, while they were, for me, 5-10 minutes too late, were absolutely perfect. And all those guys who came on worked like mad. And the squad dug itself out of a hole it felt it didn't deserve to be in. And I can't help feeling that goal and Moyes' celebration and his yellow card and his mockery of it and his statement about these people don't understand the game they're in charge of, which was what you said, Andy. And
yeah,
absolutely right. I think it could and should take Everton to Craven Cottage feeling, we're not going to get beat for a start. So perhaps, maybe let's try and be a little bit more adventurous. I thought it was, you know, I mean, obviously we're Evertonians, so obviously we were screaming our heads off when the goal went in. It was great. But I think it could be important for that squad of players, which hasn't changed apart from this one boy who's coming in, that they did that. They worked that hard for that point. And I can't help but wonder if it doesn't give the whole team confidence to go, come on, let's get the next game on. Who are we playing? Fulham? We're up to them. They got beat. Right, good.
I think I think a couple of things with regards to Beto scoring. The obvious delight that he took and the passion that he showed, you know, pulling the shirt and sort of pointing to the badge and beating his chest as he does, but also the delight the rest of the squad took in him scoring. And Moyes constantly talks about what a good character he is, you know, what a real worker he is, his desire
Calls him a beast in training, doesn't he?
Yeah, his desire to improve week in, week out.
Yeah.
And whilst a lot of people, ourselves included, I think, have reservations as to his abilities, nobody can doubt the character of the man. And his desire to do what he can do for the team.
Totally agree.
And I think you're right. I think that goal could be perhaps a pivotal moment. Who knows?
That's could what be. I when it went in, I thought, oh, that's brilliant that they've dug themselves out of that mess.
Could be the Inchy at Oxford moment for us.
In 30 years' time, are we still going to be talking about Beto's goal at Brighton?
Probably not. We certainly won't be talking about Inch's goal at Oxford, though. having said that, you know, joking aside, it would be lovely to be talking about Beto's goal in 30 years' time as being the point that really turned Everton round. It would be marvellous.
It'd be lovely to be talking about anything in this.
Well, that's true.
It's already 108.
The clock is ticking.
So anybody who's listening to this podcast who thinks maybe we're a bit slow and sometimes forgetful, just wait for the 40th anniversary in 30 years.
It'll be in a time capsule. It won't be on the internet.
On a more serious note...
Oh, good.
Just looking through the squad as it is now, mm-hmm. and the number of young players that we've got in the squad, obviously there's always been, in recent years, there's been a lot of focus on, Seamus being like 37, Idrissa Gunnigay 36, James Tarkowski's 33, Michael Keane is 33. Jordan Pickford's 31, but that doesn't really matter because he's a goalkeeper. But then if you look at the younger players, some comments on this would be useful. Harrison Armstrong, 19, Tyler Dibling, 19. Adam Asnew, 19. Tim, I'm not even going to try and say his name.
Irobina.
Yeah, thank you. I need to record it and then just like slip it into the recording.
Slot it in, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. 22, Merlin Roll, 23, Tiero Barry, 23, Alcaraz, 23, Branthwaite, 23, Jake O'Brien, 24, James Garner, 24, Pato, 24, Ndai, 25, and dear old Dwight McNeil is only 26.
Yeah.
So, and Mikalenko is 26 as well. Mm. So, that's a pretty large... That's the basis of the squad going forward. We're obviously going to have to add to the squad in the summer. And, don't we say this every... at the end of every window, well, we'll add to them at the next window. But there's a pretty good basis of a squad there.
Mm. It's when you mention all those players, who are 26 and under, that really does bode well if we can add some genuine top quality to them. And hopefully within that same age range as well, that would be very useful to have.
Yeah, in the same way that Dewsbury Hall's come in and he's 27 and obviously very classy player, but an experienced player as well, and that experience shows on the pitch. If we can bring in like two or three players, different parts of the pitch. To perform in a similar role, then I think the future's looking far more positive than perhaps we normally recognize it as.
I agree.
We're in danger of being wildly positive here and enthusiastic.
Last week we were predicting 9 points.
Well, we were predicting 7 points, weren't we?
Yes, still on, still possible.
And it's still on, but it does mean that we've got to sort of overcome the Hill Dickinson.
Well, win at Fulham and beat Bournemouth at HDS.
Yeah.
That's the task.
I know this is a dangerous thing to say, but I do feel very confident about the Fulham game. And I have quite a few friends in London who are Fulham supporters.
Are you going, Paul?
Yes, I am, actually.
Right.
And I've got a surprise, and Evertonians are going to be distraught at this. I've actually written the Everton notes for the Fulham programme.
Oh, brilliant.
I was very polite about Fulham, called it my favourite away ground.
Yes, it's definitely one of the favourite grounds in London because it's a friendly atmosphere.
Yeah,
I mean, I remember a few years back, and me and my youngest went, and Danny Murphy was playing for Fulham, and we were giving him some horrendous stick. Absolutely horrendous stick. And to be fair to him, he didn't react to it. He was laughing at a lot of it, truth be told. But there was a rather large, burly policeman at the side of the pitch. And at one point, he turned round and said, "Enough, lads. Enough." And we all kind of laughed with him. But we did tone it down. And it was kind of since we won that day as well. And coming out of the ground, and the stewards were saying, have a safe trip home. And you think, I've never had that wished me by a Chelsea steward or an Arsenal steward or a West Ham steward, but it's a different atmosphere at Craven Cottage. They make you welcome as a visitor. And wish you a safe journey home when you've just took 3 points off them.
Yeah.
I agree, Paul. It's what I think I've been to Fulham 3 or 4 times, and I've seen us lose there, and I've seen us win there. But it's an enjoyable away game. You know, it's on the banks of the river, so you can when you've got off your coach, you can go and sit. You know, if you come out of the boozer or whatever and go and have a wander down the river and this, that, and the other. It's just a nice atmosphere at Fulham. I've always enjoyed my trips there, win, lose or draw.
The area outside the new Riverside Stadium, Riverside...
Stand,
thank you. the new main stand, they've called it Fulham Pier. And that's lovely. I mean, it really is, you know, very, very nice. Some nice little cafes and restaurants there. Not restaurants as such, but, you know, places where you can get like a food market type thing.
Yeah.
It's really nice. Very, very nice. They've done it. I mean, obviously not something that Everton would have done, but given where the ground is situated and the type of ground Fulham is and the capacity of the ground and everything else, it's a really nice place. Mm. Although, again, my friends complain like hell about the cost of it. You know, the season ticket prices are just crazy. But hey ho, isn't that football?
Sadly, yeah.
But what's the capacity?
Currently, it's about 26,000.
Ooh.
Doesn't that kind of imply that the season tickets would be expensive?
Yeah.
I mean, how much do they cost at Bournemouth? Because their ceiling's less than 20,000, isn't it?
It's less than 12,000, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a tiny ground.
How do they
capacity wise? I think Brighton's is only about 30,000, isn't it? The Amex.
Yeah, I think it is 30,000. Mm. Yeah. Anyway, well, we shall see.
We have discussed this before, but given the reliance of, or the apparent reliance of so many clubs upon finance from TV rights, maybe it's about time they cut the fans a deal and said, okay, we're going to stop striping you for ridiculous season ticket price increases every year on year. I mean, we've been fortunate over the years with regards to season ticket price levels. Everton, rightly, in my opinion, kept them fairly stable for a number of years. But whether that's going to remain the situation going forward at Hill Dickinson is the $64,000 question. Might be a $64,000 ticket one day, I don't know. But the reliance of football on TV money, and people, so many people say they actually don't need the fans there. Well, if they don't need the fans to be in the stadium, why are they ripping us off? Or why are some being ripped off more, and some being ripped off even more than others?
I think the fact is that under the new financial regulations, they need every single penny they can get, because you can only spend a percentage now of your revenues. It's not about losses like it was under profitability sustainability rules. It's going to start off at 80. So you can spend 85% of your turnover on player costs, player costs. A promise, I haven't had a drink. player costs include obviously transfer fees and also include wages. And that's going to drop over the next 3 years from 85% to 70%. So the idea that fans will be cut some slack just isn't going to happen.
It's a non-starter, yeah.
TV revenues themselves are flatlining at best.
Right.
So I think we've reached the peak of that. The Premier League are talking very seriously about getting rid of the 3 o'clock Saturday blackout in order to generate more revenue. So the Premier League now want to get to a position where every single game is televised live.
Right.
And that will include the 3 o'clock Saturday games.
Right.
And the effect of that is quite significant, because that is actually one of the biggest barriers to piracy. If you think about it at the moment, on a Saturday, if Everton are playing football on a Saturday, 3 o'clock, if you're in the UK, the only way you can watch Everton is through an illegal stream, if you're in the UK.
Yeah.
So the football club's not earning any revenue from that.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, if you believe what people say, it's criminal gangs that are generating revenue from it, not the game itself. If you move to a situation where every single game was broadcast, then at least football would benefit from the fact that everybody, or nobody any longer, would need to go down the route of watching pirated or
because games will be shown on TNT or Sky or Amazon or Netflix or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you've already bought one of those supplementary TV packages, then you'll be able to watch games.
Yeah.
The last thing we need, though, is for any of those games to suddenly become pay-per-view, like boxing. You don't want, nobody wants to be buying a TNT package or a Sky package and then finding, like, if you're into boxing, that you've suddenly got to pay another X amount of pounds to watch a big fight.
Yeah. The thing that stops that currently is the fact that it's a collective agreement. So the Premier League are negotiating on behalf of all Premier League clubs in terms of whatever, what TV revenues there are out there. if that was ever to be challenged, and it could be challenged legally as a restriction of trade, then you could go to a model where if you wanted to watch Manchester City, for example, they might charge more than if you wanted to watch Fulham. Because it would be individual clubs setting the market price. Now, in reality, I don't think that's going to happen for many years, if indeed it ever will happen.
Yeah, don't like the sound of that at all.
Well, no, I don't think it's going to happen, because the Premier League's greatest success has been its ability to sell collective rights around the world. The problem today is we already broadcast every single game overseas live. So there's not, you know, if you're outside of the UK, you can watch every game around the world. And if we go to a situation where in the UK you can watch every game live, then where does the revenue growth come from? Because actually, if you look at the amount of revenue that's generated by TV per game that's showed live, that's fallen by about 30% over the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So the cost to the broadcaster of showing a single game has fallen by about 30%, and that's possibly likely to fall further in the future. It's not going to fall, not in the short term, because the contracts are now the domestic contracts won't change until 2029. But it might be something for the future. But going back to your point about fans having to pay less, unfortunately, the consequences of all of that is that match-going fans are going to pay more.
Right. Oh, dear.
That's just the sad reality of it.
Mm.
And, you know, if you look at the prices that, you know, for example, FIFA are charging for the World Cup, and if you look at the prices that UEFA charge for, the finals of the European competitions, you can understand, even if you don't agree, you can understand with the logic that when a Chelsea or an Arsenal or a Manchester City or a Liverpool say, well, if they're charging that much for those games, why can't we charge similar amounts or at least much higher amounts than we're currently charging our fans, be they loyal fans, season ticket holders, or be they just walk up casual fans.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, at least from my perspective and my analysis, that is likely to be the case, that the cost of going to a game is only going to continue to increase.
Right.
Back to work on Monday then, bro.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We haven't talked about the transfer window. Conscious of time, but one in, one out.
Mm-hmm.
Good window, bad window. Pretty much what you thought it might be.
What's the point of these windows? Why? I've never heard a football manager say, oh, yeah, I really like the idea of the January window. In fact, every manager I've ever heard talk about it talks about it in a very negative way. They don't like it. Where has this system come from? And why, you know, what's the advantage of it? Because this particular transfer window, there was about six deals done, wasn't there, across the whole of the Premier League. I just don't understand what it's about, really. What is it about?
I think the logic of a January transfer window is that all teams want to have the flexibility of being able to adjust their squad depending upon where they find themselves in the league. So if there's the top end of the league, maybe, and in the past historically, you know, bring in somebody who might score more goals, if you're in the bottom half of the league or relegation, whatever you know the particular needs are, shore up defense, new goalkeeper, whatever it might be, So that's his historical reason for it. But as you say, you know, it's largely becoming a redundant exercise now because people don't see any value in it, and therefore, you know, the focus is now increasingly going to be on the two elements of the summer transfer window, one of which is what happens before the end of June in terms of financial regulations, and then what happens before the beginning of the season or right at the end of the transfer window. From, again, just purely from my perspective, if you're going to make changes, I would have a very short transfer window that would open on the 1st of July, so the first day of the financial year for football clubs, open on the 1st of July, and it would close at the end of July, so it would just be open for 1 month, and then that gives obviously a very definitive window to trade, but it also gives teams the opportunity to prepare for a season that starts two or three weeks later in the middle of August. Mm-hmm. And you don't get this ridiculous situation whereby squads are still changing and you may have already played three or four Premier League games.
Well, that sounds sensible. Yeah, I'd vote for that.
That's assuming, of course, that the transfer market stays as it is. And, you know, there are ongoing legal challenges to suggest that it might not in the future, but nothing definitive and nothing really want to talk about at this moment in time. But there is the possibility that might change in the future.
That was a little teaser, wasn't it?
And that's about it, really. I don't think, unless you guys have got anything more to say, that we've got much more to say.
I haven't. I've enjoyed listening, though. Good fun.
Yeah. Andy, any
thoughts? No, the only other thing I was going to...
Stories about Pato or anything?
Well, I'm going to ask a question about Keno then. When Michael Keane got suspended for tugging that guy's hair and he got three games, did he get a fine as well? Do you know whether he or the club got a fine for that?
Don't know, mate.
All right. The only reason I was... Again, if you like, getting back to the consistency and whatnot, I saw the highlights of the Spurs-Brentford game at weekend, and Brentford had a player sent off for what looked a pretty deliberate kick on a player on the ground. And obviously he got a straight red, so he's going to be out for three games. And I was just wondering, you know, it looked very deliberate, you know, and could have caused a serious injury.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Keno's was a bit of a rush of blood, really, and tugged on his hair, but he didn't scalp him. And I was just wondering, you know, if Keane got a fine for tugging the guy's hair, what's this guy going to get? What's Sharder of Brentford going to get for his kick out into the midriff or nether regions of, I can't remember who it was on the Spurs side who he did it, but no, it wasn't Spurs. I'd tell a lie. Spurs played City, didn't they? Who did Brentford play?
Don't know. Bournemouth, I think.
I don't. Well, whoever it was, it was quite a deliberate kick into the player on the ground behind him. And I just made me think, you know, did Keno get a fine? And if so, how much? And, you know, is this guy going to get a fine? And how much bigger will it be for a deliberate kick as against a tug on a ponytail? That was the only thing that kind of went through my mind following the weekend's games.
I didn't see that incident. I did see the incident at the end of the Chelsea West Ham game.
Oh,
What
what was
was
that? I
that?
didn't see that.
When what's his name? Todibo, is it? Got red carded. Right at the end of the game, there was a big kerfuffle in the
Right.
in the top. Where would it be? At the away end, but
Right.
in the opposite corner. So on nearer the west stand, it wasn't near the
Right.
old main stand. And there's a right old kerfuffle. Can't even remember what it was about now. But when you compare, like what happened to Michael Keane, there was an awful lot of shoving, pushing, and a little bit of pushing in the face and stuff. And
Yeah.
yet there was only one red card. There's probably several players that deserve more. But yeah.
I mean, you mentioned pushing and shoving there. I mean, the game has got to look at all this pushing and shoving at corners and free kicks in the penalty areas, because at times it is. I mean, you've referred to it as all in wrestling, bro. It's getting beyond a joke. Some of the grabbing and everything. It can't. Well, I know VAR has ruled on that, but it doesn't seem to rule on it in every instance. When it's every corner, and just about every free kick where there's a potential cross straight into the area, the manhandling of players, and all teams are doing it. And there's nobody is exempt from it. So it's not like I'm saying, we're lily white and Everton don't do it, because we do. And we get away with it as much as we can, and it's just a mockery, really, of the game. I'm not sure, quite sure how it's going to be cured, unless the first time it happens in a game, the referee pulls out a red card and says, "Enough of this nonsense! You're going for the early bath," and then his manager will come tearing out of his white box, and he'll probably get booked. So he'll tell the referee what he thinks of him, and then he'll get a second yellow for bad language. And they'll end up with nobody on the bench and 19 players on the pitch. I don't know. It's just all sorts of nonsense goes on in the game.
It's difficult to see how VAR gets involved in a situation before the ball's kicked, because the ball is technically not in play. And I think that's possibly something that they might want to look at. So I don't know this for certain, but just trying to think of the logics of this, logical explanation, because the ball is not in play, there's no, what do they call it, sort of serious missed incidents, which is one of the things for VAR being used. Even if the referee doesn't see it, because technically the ball's not in play. So, there seems to be some leniency applied to that, because the same actions when the ball is in play surely must result either in a free kick for the defence, or in the case of the defender being the culprit, a penalty. But that doesn't seem to be the case, does it?
No. I don't know how they legislate that, but
No.
it is a organized farce, corners and free kicks. You've got everybody's got someone to mark. I'm quite certain when they bring on subs and they go and they show them the flip chart, it goes, "You're marking him at the corners." And half the players in the penalty area are not watching the ball at all. They're watching the person there whose run they have to block.
I think this is all part of zonal marking. So when you're marking zonally, every player has an area of the penalty area to defend. And that means making sure that either nobody comes into your area of the penalty area that you've got responsibility for,
Or gets out of it alive.
or nearly, Andy, I think, or allows an attacker to get into the area of another defender. So if you imagine, like you the area in, you know, the 6 yard box, if you carve that up into little squares, and you've got five or six defenders responsible, and the goalkeeper responsible for defending 6 yard box, and you're adopting a zonal marking system, which most clubs do, then your responsibility is to dominate that area yourself and ensure that nobody else either enters that area or enters somebody else's area. And that's why you get all the grabbing.
Yeah, but one of Brighton's corners, their plan was to put three guys who pushed each other, and the one at the top end would knock Pickford over.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing. You can obviously shove somebody into another player.
Yeah, all the time. Whatever advantage you can gain. Silly.
It's not.
It's a fairly recent phenomenon, isn't it? Because I'm pretty sure if you went back 10 years, 15 years, certainly, you wouldn't see the same amount of manhandling in the penalty box in the corner.
No, you wouldn't.
Free kick.
No.
Let alone Bob Stokoe days.
Yeah. That count. And he started it, didn't he?
Yeah. If in doubt, blame Reeds.
Yeah, blame Reeds.
All right, gents. I'm gonna call time.
Right.
Have a good week. See you on Saturday after the match. Enjoy the match.
I will. A live Talking the Blues from the main stand at Fulham. if only it was warmer, I'd take my trunks and take advantage of the swimming pool on the roof.
Really?
Is the really relating to me taking advantage of the swimming pool or the fact that the swimming
pool
exists?
On the roof.
Yeah, there's a swimming pool on the roof.
Oh, wow.
It's very nice.
Okay.
It's not actually on the roof. It's at the same level as the roof. So the west end of the riverside stand is like a sort of it's a small boutique hotel, would you believe? And
are you sure this pool isn't just a big gutter?
No, it's bigger than the communal baths in which players used to celebrate winning the FA Cup at Wembley, if you remember those days.
Mm.
The water's a bit cleaner as well, I believe.
You would hope so.
Enjoy it all, Paul.
I will do.
Yeah, have a good day.
Thank you very much.
We'll expect a full report on the pies at Fulham.
Ooh. Now, there's never had a pie. I don't think I've ever had a pie at Fulham.
Well, there you go. There's your homework.
Right. Enough of all this nonsense. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, George. Thank you, Andy.
Pleasure.
Always a great pleasure. We get a lot of fun out of it, even if nobody else does. That's why we do it for free, and that's why we don't have any advertising, because nobody will come near us.
I bet they would.
Yeah, pretty sure they would, actually. Yeah. Right, enough. Thanks, everybody, and see you after another 1-0 victory to Moises Everton at the weekend. Bye, all.
Bye.
See ya.